Thank you. We're joined this week by Maureen Moakley, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Rhode Island, Steph Machado from WPRI-TV Channel 12, and our special guest is State Representative Barbara Ann Fenton Fung, a Republican from Cranston. Thank you all for joining us. Let's start with the big story of the week, the verdict in the George Floyd case. This is certainly an important milestone, but clearly the issue of race and police community relations is not going away. Representative Fenton Fung, from your perspective, what tangible steps need to be taken now to improve the situation in Rhode Island?
Thankfully, the legal system got it right, and it helps to build faith in the system. It really doesn't matter, though, how many laws we change. Unless we change people's hearts and minds, we are literally going nowhere. But let's look, when we're talking about tangible things here in Rhode Island, we should really be focusing, and I know many of the communities are, about diversifying their police forces, okay, and creating more partnerships where here in Cranston, we have a police force that is very oriented towards community policing efforts. And like we're talking about schools, starting with my husband, he started a program where there's police details that go around to all the elementary schools in the morning. And, you know, the kids get to high five the officers. And so there's much more of a partnership and a friendship that forms instead of those adversarial type of relationships. And I think, you know, when we're looking big picture, that's what we need to do in the short term.
Maureen, what do you see as the key needs moving forward on police community relations?
Well, certainly I agree with the representative. But one thing I wanted to stress is this is not Minnesota and this is not Minneapolis. So there are things we can do to improve community relations. But I really think it's time that we look at the overhaul of the Office's Bill of Rights. There's a bill up by Anastasia Williams. And the governor has said he thinks it's a good idea. Shikarchi said it's a good idea, but they're not coming up with any specifics. And even the commissioner of the police and you, Clemens, argue that it needs to be some minor changes need to be made, particularly in terms of the composition of the disciplinary board and the length of suspensions from 2 days to something more reasonable, like 14 days. So it's a multi-pronged effort, and the representative is totally right in that we've got to get a better culture around this. But I do think at this point some minor changes would move this along in a positive way.
Steph, Maureen brought up the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, which is often described as an impediment to more serious discipline of wayward police officers. How do you see the outlook for some serious changes this year to the Officers Bill of Rights?
Yeah, well, as Maureen alluded to, the Providence Public Safety Commissioner, Stephen Perry, has said that if the George Floyd incident had happened in Rhode Island, the police department would not have been able to fire Derek Chauvin as he was fired in Minnesota, because this law only allows a 2-day suspension without having to go through this hearing process. And the whole process gets put on hold when there's criminal charges. We're seeing this right now in Providence, where Sergeant Joseph Hanley has been convicted of beating a man on the sidewalk last year, but he remains employed by the police department because of the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. So there seems to be an appetite for increasing that 2-day suspension to something more tangible in terms of discipline. But the police unions are very concerned that they're going to lose some semblance of due process if LIBOR is changed. So I don't think we're at a point where I can accurately predict whether there's going to be movement on this, but there does seem to be appetite on both sides of the aisle for at least inching it along, perhaps not some kind of massive reform, but changing that 2-day suspension and changing some of the processes to make it easier for police chiefs to discipline officers who do wrong.
Let's continue with some questions for our guest, State Representative Barbara Ann Fenton Fung. Representative, you were the only Republican in the legislature to vote in support of the Act on Climate. You agree with Democrats who say this would be a good thing economically for the state. We heard from opponents a very different view, that in their view, it would be very bad for the state, very bad economically. Why is there such a chasm between what supporters like you say and what opponents say on this legislation?
You know, it's interesting. I was the only Republican in the House to vote for the Act on Climate. And I look at a big picture. I'm looking at the vision. What is our vision for the next 20 and 30 years? And we know we're going to move towards a more green economy. And I think it's really important we get these plans in place. I represent...
Sure, but the question, though, is why is there such a complete variance between what supporters and opponents say? What do you know that the people on the other side of this issue don't know?
Well, I'll say that I represent a younger generation of Republicans that really feel we need to make more substantial movement on these issues. I'm the Republican who sits on environment. I listen to hours of testimony on this bill. This bill does not have any individual mandate. It does not have any business owner mandate. And it looks at creating a plan that will make us more eligible for federal funding and says, hey, look, how are we going to create infrastructure over the next 20 to 30 years to get us to a net zero environment? How are we going to get those electric charging stations in place? What are the legal impediments that we have to move? We need to have a vision. Rhode Island, often, if we can procrastinate on something, we do. And this bill starts to hold us accountable at different annual dates. And I think, you know, even just outside of issues with the green economy, we're looking big picture. We should have more of these long-term plans and making sure we're holding ourselves accountable. So I just take a different viewpoint.
Representative, you've cut a noteworthy profile as a freshman lawmaker. Of course, last year in your state representative race, you defeated the House Speaker, Nicholas Mattiello. The climate bill might not have gone ahead had he still remained in the state house. You're also showing an ability to be bipartisan. You seem well-liked by your Democratic colleagues. Why haven't more Republicans been able to emulate the same kind of success that you're having in the legislature?
Well, I promised everybody in District 15, and I'm just holding true to that, that I was going to go up there and knock heads together. And, you know, I sign on to bills by Republicans. They sign on to mine. I sign on to some bills by Democrats. They sign on to mine. I'm looking at moving our district forward. What's in the best interest of District 15? And a lot of that has to do with areas that we can find a lot of agreement on. And, you know, I just take a different approach sometimes. But I think there are other Democrats. Look at Republicans like Brian Newberry, who's worked with Greg Amore for years on this bill that I was happy to co-sponsor when we're talking about civics education. We're seeing bills that when we're working together, we're getting them through in the legislature. And I hope we see more of it throughout the year. It's just a different approach that I think is going to be successful and a good recipe for Republicans going forward.
Let's go to Steph.
Representative, as you have broken with Republicans on several issues, the climate bill, you supported Speaker Shikarchi. You would have voted for him if you weren't in quarantine that day. But what would you say to criticism that you're not a team player or you're not sticking with the party? It does look like you might have a primary challenger in your district next year. So what would you say to that criticism from the Republicans?
I should get credit for enlarging the Republican Party in the sense this person who might primary me actually joined the Republican Party just to open an account. So, you know, it's one of those things and you look back at it. Look, I have a certain vision of where I think we need to go in the next 10 to 15 years. You know, I work with Republicans well. I have great relationships with people like Brian Newberry and Mike Chippendale. And so I have a certain set of core values, but when we're talking about issues that we can find consensus on, when we're talking about healthcare, when we're talking about education, issues like the civics bill, when we're creating a special ed ombudsman, I'm also working with Democrats on that. I think that, you know, our district wants that type of leadership and wants people, and I don't think it's just my district either. I think a lot of people around the state say, why can't they work together like that? And I think we're just going to be role models for that.
And are you definitely running for re-election next year, or might you seek higher office?
I am running for re-election next year. Let's end that right now.
Let's go to Maureen.
Representative, the Biden stimulus plan allowed for unemployment benefits of up to $2,400 a month. And what's that done, it seems, is discourage people from looking for work. And right now in Newport, for example, and other places, you know, there's problems getting people to work. Oh, they want to open up, but they don't have help. The Department of Labor and Training is thinking of regulations that would require the recipients of these benefits to be at least looking for work. What do you think about that requirement and the general Biden stimulus plan?
So let's look first at the disincentivization of work. That's been a problem in restaurants, not just in Newport, or I talked to many of the restaurant owners, but also up here, I'm sponsoring one of the bills that we're trying to create these bridge programs so that people can get off unemployment and look in the workforce. Right now, we have so many openings. It's not as though we were back 12 months where everything was really tight. Right now, we're having huge issues, not only in the restaurant industry, but with home health agencies. They can't find enough CNAs. We were talking to the drugstore the other day. They can't find pharmacy techs. It's been very frustrating for people because now these small businesses that have worked so hard to get through the pandemic and have done everything possible, they never foresaw that they would have a labor shortage issue at this point as they try to make the turn. This is critically important when we're talking about the turn in for the tourism industry. You're talking about Newport, great point, Block Island as well. These guys need a break and they cannot be having to pay $20, $25 an hour for hostesses just to get somebody in the door and to keep open. So that's when we're talking about that issue, that's a big concern there and what we're doing for it. Also, go back to the broader Biden infrastructure plan. One of the good things that I'll give him credit for on that was the emphasis on broadband. And there's a big talk about the digital divide, and that really highlighted or that came to fruition during the pandemic. So let's take a look, and we're talking about education. Not a lot of kids on the urban core always had access to a device, service, and reliable service that would have allowed them to have the video type conferencing that they needed. This became an issue when we were talking about telemedicine, when we were talking about remote work. So that infrastructure plan does have a lot of funding in it so we can rapidly increase our broadband technology statewide, and I think that's a good part of it.
Representative, some of your Republican colleagues, Representative David Place of Burrville and Senator Jessica De La Cruz of North Smithfield, have played a leading role in raising attention about the Eleanor Slater complex issues, including the Zamborano Hospital in Burrville and the possible effect on patients there. This is being driven in part by concerns on cost and the amount that the state spends on this. So how can those cost concerns be addressed while at the same time addressing the concerns of patients?
The reality is this hospital is, there's something that people aren't going to understand. It's called long-term acute care. So it's meant for people who need longer-term, high-level medical care. But that's not supposed to be forever. The problem is they're getting stuck in a system where the second part in those step-down levels, whether it be a skilled nursing facility or an adult day program that specializes in traumatic brain injuries, or having home health aides that know how to work with people with schizophrenia. That infrastructure does not exist right now here in the state. And that's what we should really be investing in so that we can get people to the appropriate level of care. The reason why David and Jessica and all those wonderful health clinicians in these hospitals are screaming is because they so care for their patients and they just don't see that they are going to have the right safety nets when they leave this cocoon. I think it's about time that we put a lot of the money into that infrastructure for community mental health. It also plays out in the opioid epidemic, too. We're not seeing the community resources there as well. All runs into the same kind of flavor.
Let's go to Steph.
Representative, there's much talk about legalizing marijuana this year at the State House. There's right now the Senate plan, the McKee plan. Do you support either of those plans? What is your take on this? And do you think there's going to be Republican buy-in to do this year?
There's not a lot of details on these plans quite yet. So I'd like to see where they come up with in the middle. My main concern comes back to the public safety aspect and talking to different police chiefs. It's very hard to enforce driving under impairment laws. I work in the hospital system. So I don't know that we have the infrastructure around just if we just legalize it, you could do that. But then where is all the wraparounds as well? So it's like, what are we teaching the kids in school? How are we doing this from a law enforcement standpoint? How are we going to make sure we're not seeing the escalation? And that's been a consistent concern of public safety. And I don't see those concerns addressed yet. That being said, I'm a huge proponent of medical marijuana, especially for my patients with cancer. It's been a miracle. It's other different patients too, kids with seizures and whatnot. So there is definitely a role, but just to go full recreation without having those wraparound systems in place worries me greatly.
That's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Maureen.
Thank you.
From WPRI-TV, Channel 12, Steph Machado.
Thanks, Ian.
And Cranston Republican State Representative Barbara Ann Fenton Fung.
Thanks so much, Ian. Have a great day.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.